How, in your opinion, managing has changed the requirements and responsibilities of it since you started 10 or 11 years ago?
That's a very good question. It's a very difficult answer. Why? Because people change. And I believe the game's changed some without getting out of my area. The economics of the game forces you to adjust to your ball club that you have, in the sense that you have to have an understanding where you're at and where the owner's at, and what he can do and what he can't do. And you have to accept that whether you like it or not. What I always remember about Carl Pollack being an owner, he gave me a chance to be a manager. And I have a lot, owe him a lot for giving me a chance. An opportunity. So whatever he does is fine with me. Now, I think the manager, you got to understand that the owner has responsibilities to his people, his organization, and things that he feels are right to do, and you live with that. You might not like it if he only wants to spend $2 million on a free agent. One year, he might want to spend $8, $9 million. That's great. But when he says to you, this is what we can do, that's it.
And
you have to understand that. And if you don't understand that, you have a hard time with that. Then, with that understanding, you can move forward.
One of the things that he's elected to do, I guess, is to keep Mr. Puckett on your organization.
Yeah. All right, what does that mean? All right, now you take it a step further. What's the next step? That means there's nothing else. There's no money for anybody else. So you don't go out and sign two or three others. So you live with what you have. Okay, that's great. But that's it. That ain't enough. Now, fine, you get him done, and next year you might be able to do something, maybe not. No, he said this is it. You go play best you can. So in that way, you got to know where you're at and where he's at. And understand what they're doing and what they like to do or what they can do or what they can't do. And you go with the punch.
So with your understanding of the economics in the game being the way that it is, how do you, and believe me, I'm not blowing smoke at you, but how do you, at the end of a season where realistically you're out of the pennant race, keep your troops so enthusiastic and pumped up? I saw you play at Fenway Park in late July. You came from behind to win the game. But the thing that impressed me was that the fellas in the on-deck circle, their head was in the game.
We try to get those kind of people in our organization, in our system. We want people that want to play, no matter if the score is 10-1, good or bad. You know, or if we're 20 games behind, or 30 games behind, or we're in the pennant rank. We try to play each day as this is the most important game we can play. And we try to tell the players that we have a responsibility to the fan, whether we're home or road, that people pay a lot of money to come see these games. So we try to entertain them the best we possibly can each and every day. And we understand some days aren't so pretty. Believe me, it ain't so pretty sitting in the dugout. And we understand that. But we try to entertain. We try to run the balls out. We try to play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Some days it's nice, some days it don't work out. But we try. So when we try to get those kind of people in our system, and I expect that of my coaches, to elevate themselves each and every day, trainers, clubhouse people, they all have to have a good attitude when they come into the ballpark and ready to perform their job, whatever it is. And that's the kind of approach we like to take here. And we've had some good years. We've won, and we've lost. But we try to come into the ballpark each and every day with the right attitude that we're going to do the best we possibly can today.
You know, coaches, Tom, in recent years, I'm guessing I've been following baseball since probably before you were born. I saw my first game was in League Park in Cleveland back in 1946. I'm guessing that there's more teaching required on the part of you and your coaches than there was 20 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, because now they have to rush the people through.
Good.
They rush the people through the organization. And why? Because there's certain needs. And you might have lost two or three guys from two free agency, and you don't get them back through free agency. You go to your system, you trade away a guy or two, and then you got to grab a guy from your system. So you rush the kid to the top, and there's such a big difference in AAA and the big leagues. It's a lot of instruction that goes on. Now, some of the years have been that way, some haven't. Some years we've had some pretty good people ready to play and put forth their best foot, and there's been some years where we've had to go to school and run some things as it was instructional ball.
Can we stop this one? Need some lunch here?
No. No, we need to do what you need to do, and if we need to run some things like it's instructionally, well, that's what we need to do. And so it depends on your ball club.
Sure.
And your understanding of where you're at.
And I guess working with your coaches, you've had many of the same lieutenants for a number of years, and I think with the Twins have.
Yeah. Well, I think they're overall very good people. They're good baseball people. They work hard. They have live bodies when they come to work, and they exemplify that to the players. And if the coach is walking around like a deadbeat, well, the player's probably going to follow suit. So we try to have some live bodies here, and people understand the kind of thing that we expect, and we all sort of expect the players to perform well and give it their best shot. And how can you ask the players to if you don't? So we all seem to have that understanding, and that's the way we like to go about it. And we put our best foot forward, and if we do well, that's great. And we don't well, we put our best foot forward. We go home and sleep at night.
Well, as I say, based on that Saturday afternoon at Fenway Park, plus when I've seen you on television, that attitude is reflected by your players.
Well, again, we have some pretty good people, and over the years we've had good people here. You know, we've had Herbeck and Bernanski and Gaetti and Gagne and Reardon, and I've had some big shot people, you know, that can play. And when, you know, it makes it easier to be the manager when you have people that come in the ballpark into the clubhouse and put their uniform on like everybody else and don't act like a big shot. And they you know, that rubs off on the others. So it's a contagious thing, and we've been fortunate here to have some real good players.
I was going to ask you what you would consider to be some of the most pleasurable or some of the better moments during your tenure as manager. I think you just maybe touched on that.
Well, I think any time you can win World Series, of course, or win a playoff and get into a World Series, it's certainly memorable moments. Certain games along the way you remember. I remember a game in 87 against Kansas City Sunday afternoon where they scored three or four runs in the first inning, two or three runs. I don't know, they didn't score any runs. It was we got out of a bases loaded, no outs thing. And Bly Lemon was pitching, and I remember before the game, 10 minutes, the people were standing on their feet, applauding, ready for the game to start. And then we scored, I think, four or five runs in the first inning. We had a couple home runs, you know, and that got us a tie, or clinched a tie for the division at the time. I remember that game was a very emotional game, and it was just a regular season game. And, of course, then you get your playoffs and, of course, World Series, which... World Series in 91 was like a storybook game where each game went down to the last inning, the last at-bat, one-run game, except for maybe one game. And those games are very, very emotional. They're so emotional. I remember back in, when was the snowstorm? 91 was the big snowstorm.
When we came back from the White House. Yeah, 91.
Yeah.
Halloween,
we come back from the White House. We just got done with the World Series, went to the White House, came back, and it snowed.
Back to Minneapolis.
Yeah, back to Minneapolis, and it was snowing. We were probably the last plane to land, if I remember right. And they kept the airport open so we could get down, and I remember the snow was so deep, it was 18 inches or something, depending where you live. And I can remember just snow, and we shoveled and we plowed and we did this and did that. And it was a constant thing for like a day and a half. All you did was snow.
Yeah.
And I remember the next morning, I woke up
and I was thinking who had a pitch that day.
That's the first thought you had.
I said, who's pitching today? Who's pitching tonight? And I'm trying to think who's pitching. And then I remembered the series was over. And it was two, we went to the White House, but the next 2 days were so, with snow, and you were so worn out from the snow. I think an emotional thing finally, it still was with us.
What an emotional series it was to watch. You know,
yeah,
I can imagine
and,
being fellas so involved.
I remember that. I called Stelly, something weird. I said, I woke up wondering who the hell, and he said he basically was doing some of the same thing.
You don't mind if I use that in the book, do you? I think it's a wonderful story.
But it was very, very emotional thing. And I'm usually try to keep things, I think I'm an emotional type person, but I usually curtail those things pretty well, because Sparky Anderson told me, you know, to keep yourself under control, and the players are going to watch you. And if you get out of whack or you lose your emotions, they're going to follow suit. So I thought that was important in the playoffs and World Series, and I've always remembered that. But this was, you know, like, I don't know how much longer after the World Series.
2-3 weeks or something like that?
It was a few days.
It wasn't a long time. It was like, yeah. And the snow came, and the White House and all that. Yeah, clearly it was over. But I was amazed. That was amazing. It was sort of scary, too.
I wake up
and think, who's pitching?
The emotions of the baseball.
And I usually don't have those things.
If you were one of the, I don't intend any controversy in this book unless somebody insists that I put it in. For example, I asked Bill Giles, the president of the Phillies, why he sacked Pat Corrales in the middle of a season when Corrales had the team in first place. And he gave me some controversial things, and he said, put that in, but it's not designed to be controversial. If you were an owner, Tom, what would be your criteria in selecting a manager?
I'm not smart enough to know what owner would do this, or a general manager would do this, or the owner says to the general manager, you're my man, be the general manager, you go hire the coaches, and you go hire this and do that. That's front office stuff. I
would you look for a guy with a background
from
minor league
I don't
managing?
Know, because I don't know what's right. I don't know what's right. I only know what I try to do, and I know what some other managers try to do, and this and that. And I don't know what's right. I do what I think is right for my club, and what one owner would think, or what general manager would think about this or that. That's their business, and they're right. What do I know? I don't know nothing. I just come out here and try to get the players to play to their level. That's my job. That's my job, is to get them ready to play each and every day. And what one guy would think is important, he's probably right. What I think might be right, what somebody else thinks might be right, what Rob thinks, you know. So again, if baseball leaves that open, that's why it's such a great game, because we all can have opinions on what's right and what's wrong, and second guess. And that's, you know, you go to work the next day, you talk about the game, you go to the bar, watch the game, oh, why didn't you do this, why didn't you do that? And that's what's good about the game, and we all can have opinions about it, and who knows what's right and wrong, because it changes so much. You know, there's never two games very much too much the same, so there's always a lot of things going on in the game. You can always learn each and every day. So what's right for a manager, I don't know what a criteria would be. I don't know either. I know some days you have to be a good listener and listen to the player's problems. You have to be a little bit of a dad once in a while. You got to be a psychiatrist once in a while, and a sociologist once in a while, psychologist, whatever. You got to be a whole bunch of different things at different days. And then you can go along and have a couple of weeks where, gee, everything's going great, and you just sit there and stay out of the way. Don't get in the way so you don't screw it up. See?
I would think
there's a lot of different angles there.
Media intrusion, and fellas like Rob deflect some of this, and he had the opportunity to tell me not to come either, and I appreciate that. But quite seriously, that has to take up far more time, maybe, for a manager than you wish that it would.
No, it's true. There's a time and a place for media. The only thing I like is people are fair, and somebody does good and they write that he did good, that's great. And if somebody did bad and they say he did bad, that's true too. You know, that's fine. Sometimes some of the digging is irrelevant to the sport. I'm not talking about baseball. Whatever the sport would be, doesn't seem to be right for me. I think the reporting should be on what goes on the field. If something happens to affect what goes on the field, fine, maybe. But just go and try to dig and not, or cause some problems. I've had some writers try to cause problems and do it on purpose. Don't try to tell me they didn't. I know they did. They're just trying to cause a problem. I don't respect that much. But if somebody needs to be ripped, or if I need to be ripped or screw up, that's fine. That's the way it is. But don't go looking to start trouble. That's not the way.
One night in Philadelphia where I live and at work, I was in the Reds clubhouse before a game. Lou Piniella happened to be the manager at the time, and one of his old pals, Bill Purcell, the football coach, was visiting with him, sitting in a room like this before the game. And there were only two or three writers and maybe a Cincinnati broadcaster. And Purcell sat back in the chair like this, and he said, "Lou, why do you permit this?" He said, "In football, we don't let the writers in the room before the game." He said, "You've got other things to do to prepare your team." Mm-hmm. And I guess the answer was, well, the commissioner said that we have to keep the locker room open for a while. Mm-hmm. But that seemed to me, listening to be a fair point, that you fellas... would prefer to be doing other things.
Well, that's true, but there are obligations that the writer owes to his readers and the public and the people that need to read about the game, haven't been to see the game or didn't watch the game or didn't see it and won't watch and need to read about what some of the things that went on. But, again, that's fine. That's all fine. As long as it's done at a professional level, I have a hard time sometimes with I do... little interview here, and then you go out and you see them copying each other's. I don't know what that is. But it's done. I guess it's okay, but I don't know. Something is right.
A couple
whatever. Of it's as long as the public, I think, gets informed and informed properly, I think it's great. And we owe that as a manager, or coach, or players, owe that to the writer so the writer can get it out to the reader. And that's all part of the show.
Kind of going back to the golden rule, we're in the middle of Lent. This isn't a religious lesson, but be fair. Whether we're in the widget business or journalism or baseball or whatever it is, be fair with the people you're dealing with.
I think for the most part it is, and then there's always going to be something that will rub somebody the wrong way. Again, that's all part of being in this position that we're in. And sometimes you get used to it. You don't have to like it, but you get used to it. If you let it bother you, then you probably succumb to that level, and then it'd be tough to rise, elevate yourself, and go out and do your job. So if you want to let some of these other things that happen affect you, then you're going to probably suffer on the field, and then you have some problems. But again, it's a time and a place, and if you can maintain your composure and get through it, I don't know. I don't put too much stock in all that stuff. I just try to encourage the players to go out and perform each and every day, and
it shows.
Don't get distracted and sidetracked. If you do, then you're probably not going to play.
One or two humorous incidents that since you've been managing that you might.
Oh, there's always a lot of things that go on. There's so many things that happen that are fun and. We think they're fun. And I think the thing that where the public gets cheated a little bit and will never, ever understand the things that go on that draws the players close together, whether you're the manager, the coaches, or maybe even a Rob gets to travel with the team sometimes. And the things that draw a team together and the unity stuff and camaraderie, really is true. But the fan will never see it because they're not there. They're not there and they don't know what goes on the airplane or goes on in the clubhouse or maybe a joke at the hotel or whatever. They'll never see that. And they never really understand some of the good things that happen and sort some of the bad that go on. or not dead in the sense of, you know, should have done that or anything, but the hard times
yeah.
somebody maybe have. And they'll never understand that. And that's what's special about being on a team, at a, especially at, I think, a professional level. The unity and the camaraderie that can develop amongst players and teammates and coaches and manager and even some of the like people like Rob and identify with and can be part of some of the things that are special that the fan never gets to see and don't have any understanding of. And that's what's really special about being in this position that I'm in. I get to be part of it. And that's special, see. And I don't think your average guy that goes to the bank and works or the lawyer never gets to be part of. And that's what's special about being in professional sports.
Some of the old-timers that you've probably talked to credit train travels in the old days for that kind of camaraderie and rapport.
Same idea. Yeah, that's correct. You know, I think it was special we finally won in 1987. I think Wayne Terwilliger was my first base coach. He'd never been on a winning team. Never won.
He was on one of the bad Cubs clubs.
Yeah, he never won. Whether he was manager of its minor league, never. He never won. And then he finally won. And if you see him on the films and watch him on the films, he was in charge of the baseball. He was, that was just one of his job duties, was the baseball. Make sure the balls were here and there, wherever they needed to be. And he walked around. He's on the video. He's got the ball bag on his arm. And he's walking around, obviously in a fog. And with this ball bag on his arm. Like an hour. Never knew.
This is all new to
him. Yeah, I mean, it was such, it is a euphoria that comes when something like that happens. And people don't ever understand that. Never understand that kind of thing. That's what happened to Wayne. And for us to be part of it and see it makes it very special. And you wouldn't feel that or be part of that or the guy down the street or outside here or the concession guy, he don't have no part of that. See, and that's what is very, very special about the sport.
You hear about a guy who holds out or people and you the average fan doesn't think that they have the same kind of emotions and feelings and sensibilities that everybody else does. I've been asking everyone this question and then I'll let you eat. You've been very kind. When in your career did you feel that you'd like to be a manager?
Well, long ago when I found out I couldn't play enough to be a major league player, I decided I would give it a year or two. Mr. Brophy, our farm director at the time, wanted me to manage. And I said, okay, I'll try it for a year or two. He thought I could do it. Cal Ermer thought I could do it. And so I said I would give it a year or two to see if I helped anybody. And I would have to make that decision if I thought I was helping anybody to get better at the game and progress. And if I thought I did, I would stay with that. But if I thought I wasn't helping anybody, then I would go another direction. What that would have meant, I really don't know.
You evidently felt for the work.
Well, again, I had some good players.
Was this at the minor league level, or was your first
minor
league?
Minor league. I had some good players. I had Tim Laudner, Randy Bush, Scott Olds, Steve Douglas, Steve Green. I had some Frank Viola, Greg Gagne. I had Gary Gaetti. I had some good players. And it made that easier, and they did get better, and they ended up playing in the big leagues. And so, you know, if you do it for a few years and you don't see where you're doing it and help anybody, I mean, well, I mean, maybe you should do something else. And then I'm sure they would have felt the same way.
We feel the same way in our business. That you have to drive a bus someday or something.